just a very few of the things for which payment is long overdue. The person I owe them to worked very cheap. She managed by simply doing without a whole lot of things that she needed herself. My IOUs add up to much more than I could ever hope to repay. But you know, the nicest thing about it all is that I know that she'll mark the entire bill paid in full for just one kiss and four little words. Mom, I love you.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And I hope you enjoyed the medley of songs in honor of moms everywhere. So, I have a guest in studio. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me here.
Very welcome. We're on What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Janet. This is Janet Feld.
And it's an honor to have you in.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to it. So, did you want to start with a song?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going to start with a song that I wrote on a trip to Ireland. And my husband John and I lead vacation tours to Ireland. And our next one is in 2019. And we were part of the tour. We take our group out for a little midnight or evening kayaking excursion. And the water that you kayak in has what's called bioluminescence. So there's the water, when you touch the water, it lights up because there's these microscopic creatures in there that's what happens when the water moves.
Cool.
So this song happened there in the county West Cork in Lochine. My oars touch the water. There's stars in the sky. Paddling on Lochine on a cool August night. Black ripples light up every time we touch down. Creatures sparkle with each stroke. Laughter all around. Skibbereen in summer. An Irish serenade. The Milky Way and Orion shine like the tiny beings living in the lake. We glide to the other side. There's musicians waiting there with violins and guitars. They sing in the sweet air. It feels like fairies are tagging along, flying through the evening while the band plays a song. Skibbereen in summer, an Irish serenade. The Milky Way and Orion shine like the tiny beings living in the lake. As above, so below, light and darkness dance. The boat glides faster, rowing slowly, like life that happens while we make other plans. My oars touch the water. There's stars in the sky. Paddling on Lochine on a cool August night. Skibbereen in summer. An Irish like the tiny beings living in the lake.
Very beautiful. Very, very beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sounds like a place you really want to go.
Well, we were there, and then the first time we led a tour there. We bring a very small group. We don't bring more than 10 people because we want it to be an intimate experience. And we also, we're going to places where it's kind of off the beaten path, and in situations where if we showed up with, you know, 20 or 30 people, it would completely change the energy of the room. And so we can go places and we can kind of blend in, you know, with a smaller group. And so I work with a guide over there that she and her husband run a kayaking excursion business. And so part of the tour, she's our guide while we're there. And the first time we went was in August of 2016, and we did this trip, and so the song just fell into my boat when, you know, well, John and I were, my husband John and I were in the same boat, and it just fell in the boat, and I ran to, you know, get something to write with, and as soon as we got to shore, and then we went back into, you know, August of 2017, and we went on another, you know, it's just a regular part of the itinerary. And this time there was an algae bloom happening, and the sparkles in the water, it wasn't just sparkles, it was like the water was glowing, like so much so that like if you've ever seen animated water, like it, when you watch a Disney film and the water has this sort of light and swirl look, that's what the water looked like. And when you walked on the beach, each time you took a step, the light would shoot out from under your feet from this algae bloom. It was unbelievable.
It sounds like a Disney movie, actually.
It really was. Like I was just, it was like, I felt like I was in the middle of like Fantasia or something like that. And so, you know, we've made it a regular part. And we'll go back in exactly a year from now, May of 2019. And, it's like a must-do part of our excursion because it's just so amazing. It's just so magical.
Borrow from a different Disney movie, but that sounds like a Zippity-Doo-Dah-Day.
That's so funny.
So let everybody know a little bit about you. Background, growing up, what music did you listen to? What influenced you to get into music, and who were the people you looked up to?
Well, I can't remember not singing. I'm the youngest of three girls, and I grew up in this area, in Lexington, and I was actually born in Pennsylvania, but we moved a bunch because my father was changing jobs a bunch when I was really little, and we left Pennsylvania, and eventually, by the time I was about 3 and a half, we ended up in Woburn for a little while. And my dad had gotten a job as an engineer at Polaroid on 128. And then when I was about 5 years old, I was just starting kindergarten. My parents bought a house in Lexington. And one of the ways that my mom kept me and my sisters from fighting when we were in the car, especially for long trips, is she would sing with us. And we would sing songs. She would teach us like camp songs and things like that that had different parts, rounds, harmonies, things like that. And even though I was pretty little, I at a very young age, you know, probably 4 or 5 years old, I was expected to like join in and hold down a part, you know. And, you know, I wanted to do what the big people were doing, so I just did it. And I started studying piano when I was 7, and that was my first, you know, formal music lessons. And, I mean, I always loved music class at school, and eventually, you know, I was in the marching band in junior high. They call it middle school now, but this is the 60s and 70s. Music has always been an enormous part of my life. I mean, when I was a kid, my oldest sister is 14 years older than me. So she was in, you know, when I was starting kindergarten, she was starting college. And I remember when we were still living in Woburn, she was still at Woburn High School. She was class of 64. And she must have been a senior because the movie, or maybe she was home for the summer from college. But I remember the first movie I saw was The Beatles and Help. And she and a friend of hers took my other sister and I, who's 3 years older than me, put us in our PJs and put us in the back of the car. you know, my parents had an old Rambler with, you know, the stick shift on the column, three on the column, you know, and she stuck us in the back seat and took us in the Rambler to, you know, to the drive-in movie, and we saw the Beatles. And so starting with the Beatles, that was like really one of my first loves. I mean, aside from like the kid, you know, the baby songs you learn, you know, ABC and those kinds of things. I always loved those songs as a little girl, but I got turned on, especially because I had an older sister. I got turned on to, you know, the Beatles, and I loved, you know, all the pop music from that time. I love that music. I grew up on that music. I loved Peter, Paul, and Mary. I loved Pete Seeger. My mother loved Pete Seeger. And she had met him and had some, she was a professional dancer. And then when she was younger, before she had a family, and she had been in some sort of a performance that he had been performing at and had some incredible stories. She would tear up when she would talk about him. And, you know, before we were on air, you were talking about growing up with, you know, Gershwin and, you know, the musicals, Lerner and Lowe. I also grew up with that stuff because my parents listened to classical music and they also listened to, you know, show tunes. And I, you know, my sister Barb and I listened to a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, as we, you know, my sister Barb and I collected all the Beatle records, and she still has them all. And when I started to play the guitar in 1972, the first songs I learned were Peter, Paul, and Mary songs and Beatles songs. And I probably tried my hand at a couple of Monkees and Partridge Family songs because I loved them back then, too.
They're still good today.
It's great music. Yeah, this is music that really holds up, don't you think?
Oh, it does. I mean, you know, I know Mickey Dolenz is coming, ironically, to Comic-Con.
Oh, no kidding.
In Boxborough. He has a benefit on the Friday night, and then the weekend he'll be there to sign autographs and meet people. And I've been trying to meet him for so long. I missed him by 2 minutes the last time I went, because I had a picture I had taken of him a few years before, and I gave it to his manager. Of course, I haven't heard anything back, but that's okay. I'm going to try again this time. And, you know, David Cassidy, unfortunately, we lost too early.
Yeah, way too early.
You know, and, you know, you said Peter, Paul, and Mary. I mean, what child doesn't know Puff the Magic Dragon? Or,
well, you know, I'll tell you, I've spent a lot of years hanging out and, you know, performing a little, and I'm actually on my way to teach there in a couple of weeks at the Kerrville Folk Festival in Texas. And Peter Yarrow is very much, has been involved with the festival for many, many years. And like a year or so before Mary Travers died, I got to see Peter, Paul, and Mary perform at Kerrville. And I was just in tears the whole time. They were just as good as they had been, you know, 40 years before, and just great, great music. And I said something to Peter. I told him, I got to meet him, and I said to him that, you know, when I was first learning how to play the guitar, I didn't understand, you know, multi-tracking. So I didn't understand that what I was listening to was, you know, both his and Paul's guitar, and so I didn't understand why I couldn't make my guitar sound like that. And I told him that, and he was so sweet. He said, you know, I guess between Paul and I, we make one good guitar player.
Yeah, their music, you know, over the ages, I mean, but one of their big hits was actually written by John Denver, Leaving on a Jet Plane.
Leaving on a Jet Plane.
And
I teach my students. I'm a music teacher. I still teach that to my students. I love that song.
You know, there's just so many great songs that may get lost. I mean, I know PBS runs the, you know, for Peter, Paul, and Mary all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, I make sure that I play Light One Candle at you know, Hanukkah time, and mm-hmm. you know, it just, you can't let. And I also always do tributes in honor of those musicians that we've lost, because I think if we do it in their memory, you will forget. But if you do it in their honor, it lives on.
Huh, that's very interesting. Very interesting. Well, they're big. You were asking me, you know, who are my influences and heroes, and I mean, I think like probably millions of females around the world. I, you know, when I was young, I wanted to be Mary Travers when I grew up. And that's how I learned. I mean, that was one of the ways I learned how to sing harmony. I would listen to their records and I would learn Peter's Paul part and Paul's part and Mary's part. And, you know, that wasn't easy with the guys' parts. But I would, and then eventually when I got to high school, I discovered through friends, I discovered Crosby, Stills, and Nash, The Grateful Dead, Joni Mitchell. The first record I ever bought with my own money when I started babysitting in the seventh grade was Tapestry by Carole King.
I play...
Still a great... I mean, that's one of the best albums of all time as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I play her music all the time. I used to have a jazz show. And of course, what song do you play for a jazz show? My opening theme was Jazz Man.
That's great.
And a matter of fact, when she... And James Taylor were here for the marathon concert. And everybody else got about a half an hour, and they got an hour and a half. And it's like, you know, she says, well, basically, I grew up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or I was listening to something that I actually had put together. Tom Petty said that, you know, they put out a hit. Song and it was not a hit, it just sat there. And somebody said, the song is being played in Boston. It was American Girl. And that was what launched them. It's interesting how many musicians have been launched from New England and Boston.
Absolutely. And well, this area is so rich. The community of musicians here is pretty amazing. I mean, I grew up as a music. I didn't just grow up here, but I mean, I went to UMass Amherst for college, and that was really. It wasn't until after college that I started performing professionally. But you know, I got into my first band when I was in college. You know, and then, you know, I've been playing out ever since. You know, and it wasn't until the mid '80s that I started performing solo. But
what did you play in your first band, and what was it called?
Oh, this is the summer of 1979, and I did not play an instrument other than my voice. I was one of the girl singers. The band was called the Turtle Wax Express. It was started by my friend Eric Berman, and I met him at a dorm, open mic night on the UMass Amherst campus, and we became friends, and he asked me to join the band. And my high school best friend, Mary Jane Donovan, she was the other girl singer. And then there was a bunch of guys that played. And for the summer of 79, every Friday night we played at a place called the Corner Bar in Salem, which was one of those, you know, full of cigarette smoke because it was the 70s. And remember those indoor-outdoor carpets and then like that smelled, you know, that had the cigarette beer permanent smell in them.
And the clothes were a little bit different then too.
Yeah, a little bit. So we did that on Friday nights, and then on Saturday nights we played at a Nantasket Beach at a bar down there at the Surf. And you know, sometimes we would go early because the amusement park, Paragon Park, was still there on Nantasket Beach. So sometimes we'd go early and go on the rides before the gig. And I think they were paying, I mean, this is the late 70s, so $50 was a lot more money back then, but they would pay the whole, I think there was like eight of us in the band, and they paid us like $50 and gave us free drinks. But that summer, you know, it paid for my groceries, you know.
But also back then, the drinking age was younger.
It was 18?
It was 18. And then, of course, they moved it back to 21.
Right.
And, you know,
and didn't grandfather in the people that, because I drank legally, you know, I was already drinking legally when I was in the band, and then they changed the, you know, so I was legal for like 6 months, you know, or just under a year, and then I think they changed the law in 1980.
I thought they grandfathered us in.
Yeah.
But then again, that seems like, you know, forever ago, and I don't really drink anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I never drank that much, but it was like, you know, it was a weird thing to, like, suddenly, you know, I was legal and then I wasn't, you know, which was weird. But anyway, the band was a whole lot of fun, and I'm still connected with, you know, most of the people I was in the band with. It was a great group of guys, and we had so much fun. So that was my first experience actually doing gigs, and then I connected with one of my good friends from college. She and I formed a duo called the Lawn Chair Philosophers, and we used to play it in little coffee houses, you know, in dorm coffee houses and stuff around Amherst, and. There was a place in Amherst where you could play for tips, and we used to do that sometimes, and we'd go to open mics, and then, you know, in the mid, after I was finished, I graduated in 83, and after that, I didn't have the confidence in myself to, like, go out there. Like, I thought, like, since I was really little, I mean, seriously, since I was, you know, watching the Monkees on TV and thinking, like, and watching bands on the Ed Sullivan Show, I thought, oh, God, I'd want to do that, you know. So, and then actually, before I went to college, I lived with my sister in New York for a little while, and I took guitar lessons with this woman, Antoinette Davis, and she put me on stage with my guitar, and it was the first time I'd ever played and sang for people solo, and my hands were shaking so bad I could hardly play, but I played a couple of songs, and even though I was really, really nervous, when I was walking off of the stage at the recital, my first thought was, I want to do that again. Little did I know I was screwed for life. But after college, I spent a couple of months backpacking around Europe with a guitar and a backpack and a Eurail pass. And I was playing, you know, I was jamming with other people in the youth hostels and stuff. And I was really encouraged by that experience, like just the whole experience of traveling by myself for 2 months, but also sharing my music with people, with complete strangers from all over the world who had no investment in liking or not liking what I was doing. And they would keep me up till 2-3 in the morning playing, you know, play another one. And then after that, I came back, you know, in 85, I made my first demo on a 24-track reel-to-reel in a studio in East Hampton, and started sending, you know, going to the post office and sending press kits, and started getting my first gigs.
But see, when you were over there, you were dedicated to everything you were doing. Even though you thought you were out there just to have fun, mm-hmm. you know, even you had everything invested in your live performances on the road. You did live performances on the road when most people, you know, I mean, in Europe. And back then you could actually get around a lot easier than you can today. I mean, it was a different world.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I was just amazed by, I mean, in 2006, I was working with a booking agent at that time, and she actually booked a tour for me in Spain. And it was amazing because I went over there. It was in northern Spain, and we were based in Bilbao, Spain. And I took a friend of mine with me, and I got there, and I was paid well. I played in 2 bars and a concert hall for like 600 people. And who in Spain has ever heard of Janet Feld? Like, nobody. But people, like, the rooms were full, and people came out to hear me, and my Spanish is terrible, and I was in Basque country, and the road manager, she was Basque, and so she taught me a few words in Basque so I could say them, you know, I could speak the language when I was on stage, and a little bit, you know, with you know, I'd brushed up on my Spanish a bit so I could communicate in restaurants and things like that. And I was just so moved. Again, it was you know, similar, except this was official gigs. I was on a TV, did a TV interview, and I was on the radio as well in Spain. And everyone was so kind, and I was so moved by the crowds that, like, came out and were quiet and listening. And they were, again, like, they didn't know who I was, but, you know.
They did when you left.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the, it's a very magical, talk about a magical experience, you know. And speaking of leaving on a jet plane, the first time we went to Ireland, we were having just a little jam session in one of the pubs, you know, with our guests. And, you know, we had asked for the permission from the owner and stuff. And I started singing Leaving on a Jet Plane, and everybody in the pub started singing with me. You know? That's a song, you know. And actually, you know, I teach kids. I've taught kids for years. I spent, well, since the 80s, I was teaching in summer camps. And I just left a 10-year stint at Grossman Camp in Westwood out of the JCC. And Newton, and I spent 18 years teaching in K-8 Catholic schools in Boston. And you wouldn't believe how many kids, you know, suburban kids and urban kids, love the Beatles and know songs like Leaving on a Jet Plane, you know. And that's like, you know, different, you know, coming from, you know, whether they're from Mattapan or from Newton, you know, like, there's kids that love the Beatles. You know, I mean, which to me, you know, I mean, I'm biased, you know, it's the music I grew up on, but for me, it's really cool that kids, like they listen to it, and it certainly sounds like, it sounds old to them, but they love it. And, you know, because I think, talk about music that's held up, you know, I mean, it's just great, great music.
You're listening to What's Happening on 91.5 WMFO in Medford. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Janet Feld, and I'm visiting here from Somerville.
And we'll be back with Janet in a moment.
Despite a decades-long drug war, billions of dollars spent, and millions of Americans locked up in prisons, drug use rates have remained relatively constant. Any economist will tell you that as long as there's demand, there will always be entrepreneurs with a supply ready to make a profit. When a drug dealer is busted, it's nothing more than a job opening for someone else to fill. This is Economics 101. Join Students for Sensible Drug Policy to help teach lawmakers this simple economics lesson. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out more information about SSDP, if there's a chapter at your school, or how to start one. It's time to join the growing opposition to our country's failed war on drugs and start an open, honest, and rational discussion of alternative solutions to our nation's drug problems.
Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Janet Feld.
So you have another song for us, Janet.
I do. I've been writing songs since I was 17 years old. And I had a period of a couple of years where I didn't write a single song. And during that time, I was working a lot. I was teaching many, many hours a week. And so I really learned how much the importance of creating space for the music to come in. Because after a couple of years of not writing a single song and feeling like, oh my God, what, maybe I'll never write one again, John and I went on a vacation, and we were in southern Vermont, and on a horse farm, and we took naps, and napping made us really tired, so then we had to rest, which it was exhausting, and then we had to sleep, and I actually like read a whole book, and it was an amazing week. And I came back, we got back from the vacation, and I was drifting off to sleep the night we got back, and this next song came in. This is called Waves. Mm-hmm. feel a rush of anger, a tsunami out of control. The crest and crash might tear me apart, wondering if I'll ever be whole. When the water hits the sand, I'll see the trash and treasure. Maybe understand the truth in my stormy weather. Shifting moon, changing every day. I feel an undertow of sadness, drawn down by gravity. If I can stay with the current and trust that I can breathe. When I reach the surface, I will float along.
I always love to let the music play out.
Yeah.
And play on, because it's important, because that last note, people think it's, oh, it's just gone, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I've had a few guests who will get to that point and then start over again. So I find it's better to let it play out.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
Well, you can find me online at www.janetsplanetmusic.com, and you'll find information about my recordings, about classes that I teach. I run my own music school called Janet's Planet Music Lessons for Humanoids. So you could find all sorts of information about that, about our excursion to Ireland. And actually, this summer, my friend Paula Chase and I are launching a new summer musical theater program for kids right here in Medford at the UU Church on High Street. And it's called Let's Put On a Show. And so you can find me on the website, and my email address is janet@janetsplanetmusic.com. And you can contact me for more information about that as well. So there's all sorts of things going on at Janet's Planet.
And I also, like I said, I saw the video that Mike sent me of your lessons that you give to, that you teach to people like me who have absolutely no, well, I carry my music in a CD case or in an album cover. That's how I can play the music.
Well, you know, I was saying to you before we were on air that the only thing that has to be true in order for you to learn how to play a musical instrument is that you feel like it. And actually, starting this coming week, I'm starting a new semester at the Passim School of Music in Harvard Square. And I'm celebrating 18 years teaching there. Thank you very much. And all the cool people come down. And actually, now that...
It's your high year.
It's my high year. And so I get people, you know, guitar one. Actually, my guitar one class is sold out, which is pretty exciting. But I teach that every semester. After this particular semester that's coming up, I'll take a couple months off for July and August, and then we'll start again in September. But I teach that, and then in guitar two, we focus on finger picking mostly, and guitar three is all about making friends with bar chords, which are movable chords, because once you can play those, you can pretty much play any chord you want, you know. Hallelujah. And then we continue on from there. I have a guitar five class, and that's a by request class. I have a bunch of students that followed me through my series of lessons and classes at Passim, and after guitar four, they were like, what do you mean there's no guitar five? So I created the class for them on request. So we're doing that one again. And I also have a couple of spaces open for some private students as well. Group classes are so much fun. It's a lovely way to learn how to play. I think especially for beginners, it's really a terrific way to start. But because you have, you know, a lot of people, my students, they'll say like, oh, it's so great, you know, because if I make a mistake, everybody else is playing and nobody can hear it. So there's safety in numbers, you know. And I think it's nice, too, because then you get to see the fact that other people have a learning curve, too. And... So, yeah, anyway, there's all sorts of information about it on my website, but also you can find out more about my classes at passim.org, passim.org, and we're starting that this week.
That's terrific. And you also said when you had a very celebratory birthday recently, and what you put together on your iPod to listen to.
Oh, yeah, so when I... So when I turned 50, and that was in, that's almost 8 years ago, I'm going to be 58 November 1st, and I was just, before we were on air, I was mentioning how I like to tell my students, especially the children, that I grew up with rotary dial telephones and no voicemail, so the fact that I can make videos and voice recordings on my phone during classes and lessons, and then on my phone email them to my students is like, it's like Star Trek. So,
well, I mean, we do have, we did have, you know, one of the greatest parts of Star Trek, born across the river.
Really?
Leonard Nimoy.
That's right. He was born, West he grew End. Up in the West End. That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
So, you know, it's like being home.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
If you tell people, though, that, you know, people used to have party lines, and you used to have to wait to get on there to talk, and then some people wouldn't just put down the phone, though.
Right, sometimes they would listen in. I lived in a house with a party line. That was funny. I mean, not when I was growing up, but when I was in Western Mass, one of the houses I lived in Northampton. I stayed in the Western Mass in the Pioneer Valley area, you know, for a long time after graduation. So, you know, I went out there for school in January of 1979, and I didn't move back to this area till 1994. So late 94, almost 95. So I just loved it out there. And actually, that's where I grew up as a musician. That's where I started my career as a performing songwriter, was out there, and then continued once I got here. But
for those listening, how do you go about creating your music? Lyrics first, melodies first, and how do you keep track of it?
Well, those are great questions. So it depends on the song. And actually, one of the classes I'm teaching this semester is Songwriting 101 for people who've never written a song before and they want to get started. And I'm pretty sure there's still some seats left. And these days, a lot of times the lyrics and melody kind of come in together for me, or at least lyrics with some sort of a rhythm and a feel. Sometimes I start with the the lyrics first. Sometimes I've got a melody in my head or a guitar lick, and it starts there. So it just depends, you know. And I think one of the things I've become aware of the longer I've written is that I'm never writing it by myself. You know, the Greeks used to talk about their muse, which I think is a nice way to describe it, because, you know, I think a huge part of being a songwriter is listening. And so, because sometimes you just get these incoming, like, it's like, it feels like the heavens are sending you a song.
Sounds like Uncle Martin with the...
Yes! That is so funny that you say that. I was just saying that to someone the other day who is much younger than we are and had never heard of My Favorite Martian. And that's how I feel. When the song comes in, I feel like, you know, I get this mental picture of Uncle Martin and the antennas coming up from out of his head. And it's like I grab a pen, grab the guitar, you know, and try to listen as best I can. And it's a wonderful experience, you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, some songs are, you know, a little piece comes in and then it takes a long time to work it through, but sometimes they just come in whole.
Well, if people want to look up the original My Favorite Martian, of course, it was, if you saw Fast Time at Ridgemont High, Mr. Hand is the same person who played... Uncle Martin.
Oh, see, I've never seen the movie. See, now I'm going to go see the movie.
But that movie. But also, he was the one of the lead singers in Ain't Nothing Like a Dame in South Pacific.
Really?
Yes. And of course, Bill Bixby. Most people would know him as...
The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
In our age.
Right.
But later, he was the quiet side of the Hulk.
That's right. I remember that. That's right.
So...
Bill Bixby.
You know, it's like everything comes back to growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I love about being a teacher is that... You know, over the decades, I've been teaching since the 80s, and so over the decades, I'm always asking the kids, you know, what they listen to. And so I've been turned on to all sorts of music I probably wouldn't have heard, especially now with the internet. There's no way to keep up with all the music that's out there. Because of the internet, there's so much out there. So I get turned on to great music from other people all the time, and particularly from kids. And then, you know, I mean, I'll play them, you know, teach them the old school stuff. But I think there's nothing like, you know, I guess the music you grow up on, it's like a first kiss. There's nothing else that's going to, no matter how good the kiss is, it doesn't feel like that afterward.
Well, besides, because we have time for more music.
Yeah.
But what song, a little off track, that is not yours, that inspired you in the 60s that you'd love to play for us?
Oh, well, I'm going to retune.
You know, some people, when they tune, actually play better than when they play. And that's probably how I would be if I knew how to tune, you know. But, I mean, your music's great. And like I said, when we're off the air, that your songs and the way things have happened have been magical. You know, you go to Ireland and, you know, the water lights up. And, you know, you go to Europe on your first big trip yourself. And, well, I guess we'll have to borrow this from another Bostonian show. Everybody knew your name by the time you left from Cheers. But, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, in that first Europe trip, because I went by myself, you know, I came back from that trip just feeling like I could do anything. You know.
And you have.
And yeah. Yeah. So let's see. I know.
Old Stewball was a racehorse, and I wish he were mine. He never drank water, he always drank wine. His bridle was silver, his mane it was gold, and the worth of his saddle has never been told. The fairgrounds were crowded when Stewball was there, but the bedding was heavy on the bay and the mare. And way out yonder at the head of she hollers, the turtle dove moans. I'm a poor boy in trouble, I'm a long way from home. Old Stewball was a racehorse, and I wish he were mine. He never drank water, he always drank wine.
That's one of the first
Mary
songs
Peter
I ever
and
learned.
Paul would be very, very proud of that rendition.
Thank you. That's one of the first songs I ever learned how to play. And I teach it to my students. I teach, when I do ensemble work with my students, I teach them that song and I teach them the harmonies. And we do some guitar arrangements, and it's a beautiful song. If I haven't heard it in a long time, it still makes me cry, you know. Leaving on a jet plane, too, makes me, you know, where have all the flowers gone? You know, if I had a hammer, you know, those songs just like, whew, just
if go I had
right
a hammer, I think was a Dylan song, wasn't it?
Pete Seeger wrote that
Pete
one.
Pete Seeger wrote that?
Well, I think so.
It works then, right?
It was the same gang, you know.
No, but what I'm saying is, you know, you mentioned your mom and Pete Seeger, yeah. So it just... So you have another one of your tunes.
Yeah. You know, I've played a few of my newer tunes, the Wave song and the song about Ireland called Irish Serenade. Those are two of my newer songs that haven't been recorded yet, actually. But this is the oldest song of mine that I still play. I wrote this in 1987. It's called Things That Fall From the Sky.
Coming down, it's the autumn rain, washing away the sticky summertime. And underneath, colored leaves on the looked into each other's eyes until the end of time. In the faces in the room, these are some things falling from the sky. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl. These are some things that fall into our lives. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl to dream about for a while. Stars are out, there's a chill to the air. Kitchen singing keeps the ghosts up on the shelf. It's hard to be with these old friends of ours, knowing they won't don't see Daddy's eyes watching you as a child, as a child. These are some things falling from the sky. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl. These are some things that fall into our lives. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl to dream about for a while. And with every change in the wind, we step a little closer to the places that we're making home. And talking through the night, we can take a roll of pictures to look on for a while, to look on for a while. These are some things falling from the sky. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl. These are some things that fall into our lives. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl to dream about for a while. I pick them up and I put them in a kitchen bowl to dream about for a while.
You're listening to What's Happening here at WMFO in Medford. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Janet Feld.
And we'll be back with Janet in a moment.
This is the city where danger lurks. Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Mommy, I'm scared.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. They're not looking out for you. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Hey, pal. Pardon you.
The digital deadwalkers are multiplying. Until their behavior patterns can be modified, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons warns all innocent people to stay alert. Better yet, to step up and speak out.
Oh, hey, dude. I'm walking here.
Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well connected with healthy bones.
Welcome back to What's Happening. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Janet Feld.
Great music, Janet.
Thank you.
You know, whether it's what inspired you or what inspires you today or your great music of the past, which is still in the present because you're right here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've learned a lot over the decades about, you know, what does the best self-care look like on all fronts, spiritual, emotional, physical. So I keep myself available, you know, because when the songs come through, you know, I want to be available to those, you know, to them. And you know, I'm always telling my friends, you know, like they say on the airplanes, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first before helping others, you know, because if you're dead, you can't help anybody. And every now and again, I need to be reminded to follow my own advice on that.
It's the do as I say, not as I do. Yeah. But you have any gigs coming up?
Well, my next gig is actually not in town. In a couple of weeks, I'm heading down to the Kerrville Folk Festival, and I'm teaching three workshops down there. So if anybody in the area is heading down to the festival, I'm teaching what I teach up here. There's a workshop for beginners. I call it my quick and dirty guitar startup, and a workshop on making friends with bar chords, and then one about learning how to jam with other people. I do have a monthly jam session that I host at my home, and you could contact me by email, janet@janetsplanetmusic.com, and you know, it's for people who want to come, and I have a notebook of songs, and I create arrangements for us to play and sing, and for different people of different levels, and then my next local thing is my summer musical theater program for kids. It's called Let's Put On a Show. And in that program, what we're going to do is we're having 5 one-week sessions where we're going to work with a group of kids to write, you know, to create their own musical. And we'll help them write the